Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Good vibes, Ben.
Afternoons on the Score.
Splitter freezes Upton for a strikeout. Two down.
There's strike three. Frazier goes down swinging.
Right here.
And that'll go to the backstop.
Might have a chance to strike out four.
I don't know how you're supposed to hit it. I can't imagine trying to catch it. And he threw the splitter and struck him out. Two down. Splitter gets a swing and a miss.
That's a nasty pitch.
And Reyes strikes out on the splitter for the first out.
He's staying with that off-speed pitch, and it's served him well.
There it is.
Swing and a miss.
Foul tip, and Suzuki hangs on.
Robert Trout was the first batter that Light faced tonight, and he was hit by a pitch. And they have to make a move to bring up tomorrow's starting pitcher. Sean O'Sullivan as Trout is called out on strikes.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Those are highlights of our next guest, former big leaguer, Pat Light. He's going to be on the show in just a second. We've got him. Excellent. You can follow him on Twitter at Pat_Light, L-I-G-H-T. He is the host of the Sorry We're Closed podcast. He's on the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. And his Twitter bio says, I've struck out Mike Trout in a Major League Baseball game. Man, that is all the bona fides you need. And we just heard the clip of that strikeout.
I don't know why I didn't just keep doing that, Danny. You know?
Yeah, Pat, if you could do it once, why not just keep doing it and stay on the show for 20 years? What's up, man?
Listen, I didn't face him more than twice, and people don't know I faced him the first time because I hit him, so it didn't count as that bad. So I only talk about the strikeout.
Okay. Oh, well, one out of two is not bad.
No, it's more than some people can say, right?
What'd you get him with? What worked to get Trout?
Listen, let me tell you. First off, it was a fastball away, a little bit high, but we were losing 20-2, so the umpire gave it to me. But we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, you know, I see the GIF right now on your Twitter page. I got to be honest, that's a ball.
Okay, listen, all right, it may be a ball in a close game, but everyone knows when you're losing by a ton, you give it to the rookie.
Yeah, so, okay, wow, so they did put you in instead of the position player down 20-2, so you got that going for you.
Listen, I may have helped us get to down 20-2. Maybe a position player came in after me, but once again, we're not going to talk about that.
All right, we're not going to talk about those details. I appreciate that. So I find the conversation around sticky stuff to, frankly, be largely joyless. I like the idea behind doing things to get the ball put in play more, but I think this is going to be messy, and I think it detracts from some real excellence that we see on the field. How do you feel about how baseball is trying to implement this and change the policy midstream?
Listen, I think every baseball player, besides for a select few, can get on board with people trying, and Major League Baseball trying to make the game more fair. We all like to see action, even as a now fan. I remember being a pitcher. I never wanted to see action. But, as a fan, you do want to see the ball in play a lot. Them cracking down in the middle of the season is the biggest issue I have with this. We're 3 months, 2.5 months in, and all of a sudden now it's this huge problem. Keep in mind, people have been doing this forever. To say that this is all of a sudden new, I know they're talking about a few substances that might be new, but the real problem here is you need to go after what you're rubbing these baseballs up with. When you rub them up with this mud substance that they have come up with, when it dries out, it turns into dust pretty much, dirt, and you, it's like you're throwing a cue ball out there. It's terrible. So if they just made the baseballs a little bit tackier, a little bit the ability to grip it, we wouldn't have this issue, because then every pitcher in the game would be saying, yes, go after the guys that are doing things in excess of just trying to get a grip. But they're not doing that. They're going after everyone.
So what did you use? Did you do – because I remember that – I followed the Red Sox around that time. There was a lot of Bullfrog sunscreen on sleeves, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Listen, I didn't use it all that much. I was a low spin rate guy, so – the less the ball spun, the better for me, because I needed my fastball to dip into the zone, because if I was just getting my fastball, even though I threw 100, it just kind of went right into people's backs. So I wasn't a high spin rate guy that was going to miss bats a lot with my fastball.
So is that a sinker? So like a two-seamer doesn't need the sticky stuff to increase spin, but the four-seamer does? Is that
the
fair?
The four-seamer is definitely – it helps a lot more to be a four-seam pitcher. And be able to get that spin rate that all of a sudden just seems to almost they talk about it like the view of it is almost rising, but in reality it just stays more on the same plane from where you released it, and hitters are swinging right underneath it. As a two-seam guy, the less spin, the ball dives, and that's why I threw a good splitter as well, because the less spin on the splitter, the more the ball dives and less carry it has.
We're talking to former big leaguer Pat Light here on The Score. So help me quantify this. If they crack down on it and no sticky substances at all are going to be allowed 1 week from now, what percentage of big league pitchers is that going to affect?
You're talking 99% of the guys. I mean, there is – I don't remember. When I didn't use it, I was the only one not using it. And I didn't always not use it. A lot of times I did myself. So it's going to affect almost every pitcher in Major League Baseball and in minor league baseball when they get called up. I don't know the rules if they're implementing this in the minor league system as well, but it's going to affect everyone. It's not just a small minority that they're going after here. They're going after everyone.
You think Tyler Glass now is right that it changed his mechanics because he got off the sunscreen and it screwed him up? He was trying to hold it differently, and that led to this injury. He was furious yesterday, and we're wondering if that's not the first of several.
You know, I listened to it. The first time I saw it, I played with Tyler out in Pittsburgh. You know, the first time I had heard that, I was like, come on, Tyler. That's not doing that. But you listen to the full clip, and you know he's got a point. You know, whenever you grip the ball, tightly, which is I was kind of known for. One, you lose grip on the, or you lose control of the fastball. But the other thing on top of that, again, is your forearm is strained. And if you're throwing 100, you don't really want your muscles to be all that strained more than they already are. So, can I say for certain that this is causing his injury? I can't definitely claim that. But what he's saying has at least a little bit of merit at the face value of it.
What would you say to the argument of this is a rule, they're breaking it, now they're just enforcing the rule, stop cheating?
It's honestly a great point. I understand people's thoughts of, hey, listen, this is cheating. And, you know, keep in mind, before they even implemented this rule, it was still cheating. You weren't supposed to add anything to the baseball. It was just, you know, something everyone turned a blind eye to. I think that you have a point with saying that. I think the main point that pitchers have is that it shouldn't be considered cheating. You know, we're fixing Major League Baseball's mistake by not letting us grip the baseball. You know, they want the ball in play. If we lose control of this, you know, if it's not what, and even if it's just mental, if you just lose that confidence that you can control this baseball, who knows where, especially with guys like Tyler Glass now. He's not known for his Greg Maddux control. You don't want that guy not having the confidence that he can put the pitches where he wants it to. It's a disaster. It's not a bullfrog and rosin should not be considered cheating, and they're acting like it's the same thing as using pine tar out there.
Yeah, I think they kind of they just want to enforce the everything because that's what's on the books, and they don't want umpires to have to go out there and be able to tell the difference between firm grip and bullfrog, you know. And I get it, but everybody, what you're saying makes all the sense in the world. You know what I'm worried about? I don't know what kind of pitchers some of these guys are going to be. Like, some guys might have to change the way they go about it. Like if you're a four-seam guy who pairs a changeup or a curveball with that four-seam and all of a sudden your four-seam isn't as good, you might have to be a different pitcher. And asking guys to adjust on the fly, I don't know. We might see a big change in effectiveness for a huge batch of guys.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with, again, like I pointed out, the game of baseball is so mental at this level because you're at such a high level of competition. Everyone at that level is extraordinarily talented. But when you, even at the physical time where you're talking about those four-seam fastballs that maybe dip a little bit more, maybe instead of swinging under, they're getting foul tips. The guys are staying in the at-bats longer. You're talking about pitch counts rising. You're talking about a bunch of different things that could happen that makes the pitcher's job difficult. And the pitcher's job is already difficult facing a lot of these lineups in Major League Baseball. I don't think, again, and to your point that you talked about how umpires can't go out there and distinguish exactly what they're using, you know, that's fine. But like I said, if you just made the baseballs tackier, if you did it yourself and made sure that guys didn't have to use the substance, then you can do that broad range. Hey, anything you're applying to the baseball is illegal. But until you fix your own problem, you can't go after the pitchers because right now they're just fixing yours.
Former big leaguer Pat Light, Sorry We're Closed podcast, is our guest. We had a guest on earlier, Ryan Spader, and he sounded like, you know, he loves baseball. Sounded like his dog was being kicked live in front of him while he was being interviewed. He feels let down by the game. I don't know if you saw his Twitter thread. You know, he accused Beltre and Utley and the Yankees with Aaron Judge and the Royals in 2015 and the Rockies and the Diamondbacks. And, I mean, he basically said, everyone's cheating. The whole sport is in on it. It wasn't just the Astros. It is a permeated culture within the game to if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Your response to that from your experience in the big leagues is what?
You know, I can tell you that in my experience in the big leagues, yes, cheating happens a whole lot more than people think. And I know Ryan I've interacted with him on Twitter a few times. I don't want to call him naive, but I mean, let's call a spade here. Of course, there's too much money on the line at that level. There's too much going on, too much pressure. Everyone's going to try to find an advantage. It's just the nature of the beast. If you think it's like everyone's all rainbows and butterflies up there and everyone's really following every rule, I couldn't even tell you what the rules are in Major League Baseball. There's 1,000 of them. So it is always going to be some people bending and breaking some of the rules. I don't see anything, the Astros went a little egregious, but the whole mantra in Major League Baseball was you do what you need to do. Once you get to that excessive point, and essentially the Astros did that, that's when we're going to pull the reins back. And I think that's what Major League Baseball did. It was kind of crazy how it all happened, but you know, I think they did it the right way.
Yeah, it could have had more teeth in the punishment, but when I saw the story, I was like, yeah, of course, everybody is doing something like that. It just sucks to kind of have your image of the game tarnished if you were a little bit naive like that. But let's find some joy here, Pat. You're a fun dude. You've got a fun podcast. You struck out Mike Trout on a ball. you were on the 2016 Red Sox. Give me, like, I don't know David Ortiz. You maybe do a little bit. You got a good Big Poppy story for me.
Oh, dude. You know, the only Big Poppy story, it's cool in my, I guess it's cool in other people's lives. The big Poppy story I have, I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with the guy. I was in spring training with the Red Sox, obviously, and getting interviewed. First time getting interviewed at the big league level. I'm up there in the middle of this thing, and all of a sudden I had this huge hand just absolutely smoke me in this super serious interview. Like, this is not like one of those, hey, how's spring training? Like, we're talking baseball here. And next thing you know, a huge hand on my back, and it's David Ortiz. And I've never even spoken to the guy yet. And he just goes off in the middle of my interview about, you got to make sure you treat my buddy right here. I'm like, I'm not even sure this guy knows my name, but he's there having my back already, which I love. So I was sweating bullets in the middle of that interview just because I was like, I'm not sure what's happening here. Should I just give David this interview? Because it seems like he wants it. It was fun, but the guy's honestly, he's one of the best teammates I ever had. He was fantastic. Even the little interactions I had with the guy, he was awesome.
Hey Pat, you were 20-0 with a 1.52 ERA in high school, you know, and then you're great in college playing in the Cape Cod League in Chatham. That must have been fun. First round pick in the draft, and you end up, you know, having a cup of coffee. And that's all it is. I always wonder what, like, what it's like to be that great and then have to realize, oh, hell, I'm not going to be great at this level. That's was there a moment where you're like, oh, no, this is harder than I thought or something like that?
You know, there was no actual moment. The thing that happened with me, not to dive too deep into my own 14 seconds in the big leagues.
we have the time. We have 14 seconds. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. The thing with me was I lost control of my fastball. I was always a control guy, and then I got moved over to the bullpen. You know, Red Sox had wanted me to throw 100 miles an hour, which I did. I just didn't do it in the zone a whole lot. And then when I tried to reel it back in and find some control, it just didn't work out for me. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I look back and I'm like, yeah, maybe I could have done a few things differently and maybe has stuck around for a little bit longer. But you live, you learn, you can't win them all, right?
Yeah.
So that's him in high school.
Yeah. there was that Christian Brothers Academy, man. I'm a Jersey kid. I we played against you. Dominant. Understandable.
Well, yeah,
that's my Holocaust question.
No, yeah, I appreciate that. No, they're also just very good, and there's a difference there. But when you're on the rest, like I'm going through that roster right now, there's some guys here that we have connections to. You know, Yoán Moncada is in that organization.
Oh, he's on Greenville. When like it's the greatest team of all time.
Okay, so what?
Yeah,
Kopech.
Yeah, so talk to us about the guys that are on the Sox now that you interacted with back then.
Oh, I mean, who's with them? So Moncada, he was a little bit younger than I was. I didn't have a whole lot of interaction, but the guy came over. What, he signed $32 million contract to come to the United States, which was insanity. Hmm. Honestly, as far as the White Sox are concerned, you guys, Chicago people. The guy I had the most trouble with that I still will never get out to this day, obviously I won't get out because they kicked me out of baseball, but if I was still in baseball, I wouldn't get this guy out either. It's freaking Tim Anderson, guys. That guy, I played against him coming up in you know, I forget where your guys' farm league was, but he led off, and he would swing at every first pitch of the game, and he always hit a home run. It was unbelievable. It was the most frustrating thing. I'm just trying to ease into the game. I already had a 43 ERA, and the guy couldn't even get me out of the first pitch before boosting that ERA. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
Couldn't cut you a break.
No, he couldn't cut me a break at all. I hated it. But Kopech, you guys have Kopech over there, don't you? That guy is as electric as it gets, and a very nice guy. I know he gets a bad rap as far as – I know he had a lot of stuff going on personally. I'm not sure what's going on now and his injuries and things like that, but – you know, as he was kind of a soft-spoken kid when he was playing with the Red Sox, and he was very nice. He had, you know, maybe a few demons, but he's a very nice kid.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of raw natural stuff and talent, I mean, I'm sure you've seen better, but is he a one percenter in with regards to that?
Oh, yes. I mean, how could you not be? The guy's throwing, you know, 107. he's as the guy is as far as talent, raw talent, it's unbelievable what that guy can do on the baseball field. And again, if you know, at least with Boston, I know I saw some of the off the field stuff that he was struggling with. If that ever kind of all came together for him, you know, dear God, he'd be really something special to watch in the next 10 years.
I think it is coming together. Like, he's a little hurt right now, but he's been absolutely great and seemingly in a very good place this year.
And it's hamstring, not arm. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, good to hear.
What do you make as a guy who still talks about baseball, was in the show, loves the game? What do you make of all of the things they're trying to do to, you know, improve it? Like, forget the sticky stuff part of it, but just to give us the best version of it, right? Historically high strikeout rate, balls never put in play, 4 minutes of dead time between balls in play. They're trying a lot of different things. What do you make of all the changes or suggested changes?
I think they're inherently stupid. I think they're doing a horrible job. And I've said this for a long time. I was saying it in baseball when I was playing, just not publicly. You know, we have a bunch of people, you know, that, to my opinion, are just not baseball people running the show. We had issues with this. Even at just a singular team level, you know, we have these decisions being made with these stats that we're creating out of thin air. And just plugging numbers into a computer, and we're not really listening to the game anymore. And again, I think that's what happens when we get away from listening to baseball people, and then instead of listening to a computer or, you know, some guy in the front office that never played but, you know, can run an Excel spreadsheet with the best of them. That's just not what we're looking for in the game of baseball. And I think they need to dial it back, or at least hire some advisors around Manfred that can advise him, that played the game for a number of years and can kind of give him what the game needs, not so much what they believe these random fans on Twitter need.
Rob Manfred's approval rating within Major League Baseball is what?
Amongst the players?
Yeah.
It's got to be zero.
Zero.
Maybe the Astros fans, the Astro players like him.
they got off easy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but there's no way anyone's loving what he's doing right now. And even on the Astros side, you talk about, I'm sick of hearing some of these players come out and say the Astros should have got more. Yeah, maybe they should have, but the you players that are talking about that, your players association did what their job was to defend those guys and make sure that they couldn't be punished for talking. Otherwise, they never would have talked, and Major League Baseball wouldn't have got what they wanted. So I understand that we all wanted the Astros to take a huge, huge punishment, but like you said, you pay your dues so these players association comes and defends you. And I think that if the shoe was on the other foot, I think a lot of these players would be singing a different tune.
You made it to the show, Pat Light, and you made it to this show, and we appreciate all of it.
Which was the bigger accomplishment, by the way?
That's a good question.
Well, I spent more than 14 seconds on this show, so I think it's this.
Perfect. Good luck with the podcast, the Sorry We're Closed podcast. Follow him on Twitter at @Pat_Light. Pat, thanks for the time, man.
Anytime, guys.
That is Pat Light, former big leaguer, and... We'll talk about that question.
Yeah, I always want to ask that kind of thing, and I always make people feel terrible.
Well, there's a more empathetic way to ask it.
Yeah, you'd think I would have figured that out by now.
You would have, and then he doesn't know the bit of the Holocaust question, and right. So then you just said the word Holocaust randomly in the
sure.
middle of the interview.
Which always is a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. So we can kind of work our way through that as the White Sox try to walk this game off. It's Parkinson's Beagle on the Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's LYST. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Harkins and Spiegel Show Flashback.
He's hilarious. Our new senior sports correspondent, Flew LeBorg.
I wish you were there during my Tinder dates, because this is not the feedback I'm receiving.
Does the Third Reich come up at all at those moments when Tinder is an issue for you?
Every German history thing, of course, it's number one. They're like, were you a member of the Third Reich? And I said, listen, look at me. Yes, my skin is good. I have exfoliated. But look, I'm not 92. What's going on, people? Please. Wikipedia, guys.
I'm sorry I asked him about the Holocaust. I agree. That was
what the hell was that?
I couldn't get it out of my head, Danny.
And thus birthed the Matt Spiegel Holocaust question bit. Which I didn't sign off on. But it's like, we have a German on the show, and so we ask him about the Holocaust unnecessarily, even though he's a young comedian. And then we ask Dave Wanstead about Rick Meyer.
Yeah,
and
Dave engineered that entire trade, and his tone was just, oh.
Just the only person who could kill a vibe with a Dave Wanstead conversation. And as the good vibes provider. And then we have...
Nobody bring up John Theory next time.
And then we have Pat Light on, the delightful former big leaguer, self-deprecating, making fun of himself, uh-huh. 14 seconds in the big league, struck out Mike Trout, but they were down 20-2, and he knows it was a ball. You're like, so you were really good in high school and college. And then you got to the big leagues, and let's be honest, you weren't very good.
Yeah, why?
Why?
No, I asked if there was a moment when he realized.
Yeah, I just think there's a more empathetic way, because I agree with you. It's interesting. It, so many of these guys, best player in high school,
that's
best player
the
in their town, best player in college. What is it like to get to a place where you've been the best for forever, and then you're no longer the best? Is
a kinder way to do it.
Is a kinder way to do it, because he knows he's not the best.
Yeah.
But what happens?
Boy.
What happened when...
Wait, hold on, let me write this down.
I'm just saying, and Danny I loved
Parkins,
it.
Danny Parkins' interview technique.
It's just an
seminar
idea.
Seminar has begun.
It's just an idea. Hey, you asked what it kind of derailed yeah. it a little bit. But
oh, yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible.
You asked?
Because I got to the middle of it, and then I'm like, oh, no, I better land this.
That was the problem.
Yes.
You didn't have
I didn't
the
have
question.
The yeah.
You had the premise, and then when you didn't have the question, you then linger on the premise, and so we're lingering on, remember when you got there and weren't good? Do you remember that time when you were in the big leagues and you were no longer the best? That must have sucked. And so, yeah, I just, you know.
Okay.
I just say, it's just an idea.
It's a good one.
It's an idea.
It's a very, very solid idea.
We're not going to have any problems with that with Mark Grody. Who's going to join us in a few minutes for a Bears report.
There's a ton of Bears news.
Yeah, news and sound and apparently a testy Matt Nagy that we will hear momentarily. But also, we have to monitor what the hell's going on with the White Sox, because this is, again, this is not using closer tie game on the road. This is not using closer tie game at home. Now, into extra innings, not only did Tony La Russa go to the righty, Evan Marshall, with runner in scoring position, two outs, eighth inning, he then doesn't use him for the ninth or the tenth, and now Ryan Burr is in with the extra inning rule against the Rays, and Liam Hendricks, 22-pitch, one-inning save last night, day off the day before that, 13-pitch, one-inning save on Sunday, wasn't used in the blowout on Saturday,
yeah.
So he's only thrown 35 pitches in the last 4 days.
Yeah, so that part doesn't make sense. Now, Hendricks was warming up earlier and then sat back down. So
the old dry hump.
The old dry hump. So there could be that. Maybe Hendricks doesn't like to come in after that. Maybe La Russa doesn't like to bring in guys after that. Maybe Hendricks felt something right there and they decided, no, okay, let's just skip you then today. You know, so we don't know. There's information we don't know.
But wouldn't that even be more reason to use him if you get him up and he's throwing, you know, like.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But
you're wasting him, I think, in essence, if you do that.
But Hendricks was really unhappy about the rain delay. How long was the rain delay the other night?
About a half hour.
Yeah, so, and that's not dissimilar. Yeah, it was about 20 minutes. Hendricks was really unhappy the other night when he was, they made him start the inning in a crazy downpour, and then the umpires called the game for a while, and he came back out and blew the save after 30 minutes. So maybe there's some of that thought process going on.
Yeah, meaning they communicated and they actually had a productive conversation usage. Hey, we're speculating
right?
here, but I'll take it.
That is a radical thought.
The rain delay thing got kind of buried. That was a weird thing. Hendricks was mad.
It was something like very enjoyable turned into not so enjoyable pretty quickly. I loved him being an absolute lunatic out there, whipping the baseball around, you know, being upset. But then, you know, blowing the save after that, that wasn't good.
I get the same. Speaking of enjoyable, Moby Ditka, Bears, and we'll see if how this White Sox game ends. We're tracking it. Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
Here's the man that you fear most in football staring you right in the face.
Mark Grody.
I call him a maniac. Stone maniac.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
You had to overcome the mystique. It was almost like an odor. He exuded a kind of a presence.
Sideline reporter for Bears Radio, WBBM.
His whole damn life was football. Wasn't driving a pretty car. Wasn't going to the local bar and pounding your chest, I'm the greatest. It was the opposite.
Mark Grody.
He was Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl.
Mark Grody with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Makes me happy to talk to Mark Grody, talk Bears. There is Bears news. The White Sox also walked it off in the 10th inning. Who needs Liam Hendricks when you have Ryan Burr and Evan Marshall? That's what we always say. 2 of 3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. Mark Grody joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Moby Ditka, where should we start our Bears report today, my friend?
Gentlemen, here is where I think that we should start it. Once upon a time, about a week ago, I had Hub Arkish on one of the shows that I was hosting in the evening, and I asked him a question that he could not answer regarding Justin Fields. And so today, just a short while ago, we had a chance to talk with Matt Nagy after the mini camp session today. And so Hub asked the question that he couldn't answer for me. And I think it's a really good question. And the answer kind of runs deep and goes in a direction that we didn't necessarily expect it to. So here is Matt Nagy with Hub's question.
I thought you were pretty clear yesterday in laying out your quarterback depth chart. And it's easy to understand why, you know, you'd want Justin to get the more valuable reps at number two. But it seems to leave one question. You know, we all hope that Dalton's healthy all year long. But if for some reason Andy wasn't available week one or week two, does this mean that Justin automatically gets his first start, or do you then have to reevaluate the depth chart?
So I'd say two things to that. So number one, as you all know, and I understand too, like that when you draft a quarterback in the first round and you trade up and get the guy, I completely understand the questions that are going to come, you know, each day, and just kind of wanting to know who's the guy going to be at this day or that day or this week or that week. And so I get that. And to answer your second question, I would say this. When you're the number two quarterback and in that situation that you're presenting to me, then yes, he would be the guy. But when you talk through this, that's where it's like, you know, these quarterbacks, all three guys, just because they're in that spot right now, we've explained, and I specifically have explained to each one of those guys, that you're doing everything you possibly can to be as competitive as possible and be the starting quarterback and the best quarterback you can be for the Bears. And so I'm taking a little bit of time here to say this because I know that these questions could go on and on each and every day, but out of just politeness for me and respect, as we go here moving forward, I'm just gonna, like, I'll give you updates as we go as to how the guys are doing. But as far as the depth chart goes, this is where we're at with Andy as the one, with Justin as the two, with Nick as the three. But all three of those guys know that you need to produce, you need to play well, you need to compete, you need to be the best quarterback you can be. And then it's going to be really pretty easy for us to be able to see who that is and how that goes. And then there'll be a process and a plan. We're going to stick to that. It's not going to change tomorrow. That plan's not going to change tomorrow. The plan is not going to change in training camp. The plan is a plan, and it's been thought out. And so as we go, I'm just taking some time on this question because I think, you know, this could go every day. And I just want you to know that's kind of, as we go here, where I'm at, you know. And so depth chart wise. Yep. But to go back to your original question, Hub, if that was the case, yes, then Justin would be our starter.
And I think it's important to know that, because if the idea is, guys, that they don't want Justin Fields to be thrown into the fire on September 12th, we now know that if something was to happen, and nobody wants an injury here, that's not at all what we're promoting, because I've had the snide comments on Twitter. If something were to happen, yes, Justin Fields would start September 12th in LA, and they wouldn't just throw in Nick Foles because he's not ready. But it sounds like you guys have a lot to say, so go. Shoot.
The plan is the plan. Oh, good. I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, I thought the plan is a plan, or the plan is the plan. Either way, it's a plan.
It's a plan.
Yeah.
Just to reiterate, they have a plan.
And it's a plan.
And it's a plan. Got it.
Right.
I love
plan. And the plan is the plan, and the plan hasn't changed. So, yes.
But maybe I am listening for it. And I will admit my bias of believing that it is better to start the young guy as soon as possible and to learn on the job. So I admit the bias on listening to it.
I bet we heard the same thing.
But if he's still talking about, like, they can compete and they can change, like, there's a chance, right? Like, he's...
Oh, no, we didn't hear the same thing.
You, really?
He said, not...
I think I'm more with Spiegel.
Not,
yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Not gonna change in training camp.
Yeah.
Right.
Hear that?
Right. But he also talked about these guys are competing to be the starter.
Not going to change. It, like, when he's rattling off the times, it's not going to change. He said it's not going to change in training camp. I will be shocked. Shocked. I'm going to win that $100.
Yeah, you're going to win the $100.
I think he's locked in. He's locked in to night one. If not, what, two starts, three starts, four starts, whatever. I think he's locked in.
It's just so arbitrary, man. And so the whole thing is that he needs to learn. We game plan. He's got to learn how to game plan for the Rams, but not start, and then do film review of the Rams, and then maybe he's ready for Cincinnati.
Right.
Or the next.
Could be.
That's just so silly, though. Like, okay.
But he is, he is officially, even for September 12th, in L.A.,
he's the backup.
He is the number two back. Like, and I guess the follow-up could have been or should have been, and that means that he's going to be in uniform. If Andy Dalton gets hurt on the first play of the game, it is Justin Fields in a cold call. So, that is what is going to happen. So, at least there is that. And I don't know. I thought it was important to have that question answered.
It is. I just don't. I don't believe it. I hear it, but coaches lie. And the whole point of training camp, we always talk about position battles.
What don't you believe? You don't believe that it's not going to be Justin Fields starting no matter what?
I don't believe that it's not possible.
I got you.
What?
Yeah, I
training camp is a competition. It's where people go to earn jobs. It's where the depth chart is established. Like I why would it not be possible for what if Daz Newsome
beats out Anthony Miller for the third wide receiver job?
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's possible. Anything, right? This is how training camp works. You are who makes the team? Where do they start? How many snaps do they get?
Right.
Who is the first defensive tackle in on the rotation? Who's third DT in? Who's the nickel corner? Like that's how training camp works.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like
it. But not at that spot.
But that's dumb.
Well, I mean, if he becomes undeniable, he becomes undeniable. You know what I mean? Like if Justin Fields is just crushing it and every player sees it out there and he is above, if they are seeing what they need to see, we'll know it when we see it. That was what Matt Nagy has said multiple times. We'll know it if they see it. I would imagine that he would not be deniable. But let's move on with Matt Nagy and more on Justin Fields and a little bit of Tariq Cohen. I think I left my question here, so here it is with full context.
Hey, Coach, I just had a quick injury question, and then one other. I noticed that Tariq Cohen was walking a little bit stiff-legged, you know, while he was out there. Where is he in his progress? And then just how was Justin Fields today in your eyes? Was today a good day for him?
Yes. So Tariq, he had a little stiffness today. And so that's why he was out there and you saw that. And there's going to be up and down days with these guys as they go. That's just a part of the recovery process. And they're, you know, working through all that. So and Justin, so what I thought today was a good day for him. He threw the ball well. There was a couple series here in a row in team where he made some nice throws to the sideline. He had one where he kind of kept a play extended, backpedaled, and threw a nice ball to the left to Thomas Ives. So today was a good day. And we want to keep stacking those good days up, both mentally, physically. And I haven't watched the tape yet, so there'll be some stuff that shows up. But from my perspective, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, and Fields also hitting Darnell Mooney with a deep ball in the corner of the end zone. I think Mooney might have been out of bounds, but it was still a nice pass. And, yes, believe it, Andy Dalton out there as well. He had some nice moments, too. He hit
Nobody cares.
Komet at one.
How about this? How about Thomas Ives? How about Thomas Ives of Hinsdale Central High School? Went to Colgate, now here in Bears training camp. How about Thomas Ives? Anybody care about him, Danny?
No.
Okay.
Oh, who cares?
Yeah, his family, maybe, and his neighbor.
And his Uncle Charles, terrific.
Matt Nagy get a little testy with the media? He's already upset with these questions?
Well, I mean, you heard him in that first response. I don't think he was polite. He was in the most Ned Flanders of ways. He was just saying kindly to us, "Hey guys, my answer's not going to change."
Yeah, good luck with that
on Justin Fields. So, but we're reporters. We're going to continue to ask the questions, and
right.
You know, maybe reframe it or ask different questions pertaining to him. But we can't not ask those questions. But I think that I wouldn't say testy's probably the wrong word that I sent to you guys. I mean, I think it was just more of him kind of saying, hey, you know, here's the deal. Yes, he is the number two quarterback if something, but you know, think the plan is the plan. And the plan is that he's going to be the quarterback now, tomorrow, and then in late July when they do start training camp.
Allen Robinson was there. There was some question about it. How did he handle the questions about his future presence?
Well, as always, he handled them smoothly. And I had a question for Allen Robinson pertaining to why? Well, let's take a listen to it. Here's me with Allen Robinson.
I'm just curious. Obviously, we know that you're not thrilled to be handed the franchise tag. What went into your decision to indeed show up on time to this mini camp? And as you said, you plan to show up on time and be, you know, full go for training camp as well. Why did you decide to show up?
Yeah, like I said, man, whatever comes from the contract standpoint, again, will come from that, you know, that's not totally in my control either way, you know, so being able to control what I can, not setting myself back in any kind of way, not forfeiting any money in any kind of way. Those are all things that go into the factor of, you know, what I want to do and the things that I want to accomplish, you know, not only team-wise, but personally, you know. So, again, I mean, it's just kind of, it's something that just makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that is common sense. Don't want to lose any cash, and he doesn't want to fall behind. So I guess those are the answers.
Hey, Groats, before you go, Eddie Goldman, any update or any context you can add to Eddie Goldman not being here at this point?
No, yeah, still not here today. And I know that Matt Nagy doesn't seem particularly pleased that he is not there, but there was no new information on Eddie Goldman today other than to say that for the second straight day, we did not see the number 91 out on the field today for the Bears. And it sounds like, Matt, that he will be in training camp whatever the exact start date of that is. It sounds like he will be there, or there's going to be some problems. But it sounds like he'll be in training camp.
Okay, good. And then Thomas Ives, one more on him. 2019 and 2020, one of the last roster cuts and on the practice squad. What do you think about
help?
And he is local.
Destined for the practice squad again.
Yes, sir. Hey, to that end, guess Jesper Horsted. I saw Jesper Horsted catching a pass today. So that's for you too, Danny.
Bears. any Bears nuggets that actually matter?
Yes, here's a few that matter. Tevin Jenkins, the Bears' hopeful left tackle this year, signed his rookie contract. Preseason, Matt Nagy reiterating that, yes, the starters will get more playing time. In particular, he kind of outlined the way it would go, and probably the second game is when you would see a lot of starters. So circle that. Remember, three preseason games this year. Full capacity at Soldier Field. I'm sure you guys have gone through that. Anthony Miller still not on the practice field today. He is nicked up. We don't know the specifics of that. Kendall Vildor had a pick, and Marcus Goodwin is everywhere. Marquise Goodwin, one of the Bears' new wide receivers, seems to be everywhere. So there you go.
Mark Grody, Bears.
Bears.
Bears. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
We have an update on why Liam Hendricks was not in. The White Sox walked it off, and there's stuff to react to there as well. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.